Previously on Slim and None.
It was a worrisome time. I mean, I was on my own, you know, trying to land on my feet, you know.
In 1971, after spending almost 4 years with the Flyers organization, Howard Baldwin decided it was time to move on. Though where he would be moving on to, he wasn't quite sure.
I was just going to wing it. I was going to find a job in the Boston area where I wanted to be and try to find a job in sports. And a plan evolved where I met Johnny Coburn, who was an old family friend and who had this clothing store and who loved sports as well.
And I just had my receptors out, trying to think of something to do. And Howdy burst on the scene at a perfect time for me, because I was restless. My name is John Coburn, from Needham, Massachusetts, originally. Together with Howard Baldwin, we started the New England Whalers, which subsequently became the Hartford Whalers.
And I was having a great time with John and trying to find out what that next step was. I just felt something was going to happen and something good would happen. And fortunately, it did.
The day that Howard Baldwin picked up the paper was the day that everything changed.
It was like four or five sentences in the article that we read, and fundamentally just saying, Dennis Murphy has it from Orange County, one of the founders of the ABA, and Gary Davidson have started a new league, not unlike the ABA, to compete against the NHL, and are out soliciting franchises. I just read it. I said, Dennis Murphy. And the WHA, and said to Kobe, we should make a call.
Even though we had no place to play.
We had nothing. we just knew. We knew this was what our mission was.
Howard and Johnny impressed the league founders, Gary Davidson and Dennis Murphy, on their initial visits to New England. And so the young guns would be given a chance.
He said the criteria for getting in was proper financial backing, obviously an arena, and the initial franchise fee of $25,000, which really went to Don and Gary and Dennis, and $10,000 for league dues. That was it. That's what we needed. So, you know, we had our marching orders and we went after it.
Of those three things, they had none, and there was no time to waste. It was September already, and the first league meetings were scheduled for October.
Well, we knew we were in over our heads from day one, and that was probably the sort of the lack of fear in it, because nobody really thought we could ever pull it off. I think our families didn't quite understand what the hell we were doing.
With so many tasks to accomplish, the boys decided to expand their team.
My name's Godfrey Wood. I was classmates and best friends and still are with John Coburn. I was lucky enough to have a client. I was in the investment business at that point. I was lucky enough to have a client who had made a lot of money in a big hurry and wanted to be the major investor in this team. And it didn't take long to convince him that we could do well with his money.
By procuring the proper financing, Godfrey was able to take a load off of the boys' shoulders. Still, other challenges remain. Finding a suitable arena to play home games in was atop the list of concerns.
And initially, we didn't really focus on Boston. Initially, we focused on Providence because they were actually building a brand new arena in Providence, which is there today, 11,000 seats. So we figured, okay, what could be better? We'll play in Providence.
When October rolled around, despite not yet having all the details sorted out, the team headed to the Hotel Americana in New York City for the first league meetings. Here, Howard and Johnny first met the league's power brokers face-to-face. They didn't quite fit in.
We were 20 years younger than anybody else there.
They looked down at us quite a bit, initially.
Yeah, oh, then there's no question they did. They they thought we were rich, spoiled brats, fundamentally.
Little did they know.
Yeah.
After several days of waiting, the time finally came to pitch their franchise to the league founders.
Well, basically, we tried to sell them that hockey was king in Boston and New England.
The group admitted that beyond the money designated for the league dues and the application fee, they were yet to organize the finances they would need to operate a hockey team. Gary and Dennis weren't too concerned about the money. The home game logistics were yet to be ironed out. They found that much more unsettling.
But we just explained where we were with the arena situation, that we felt we had an opportunity to get into the Garden and Providence. And it was a work in progress, but we said we're going to get it done one way or the other.
The group was sent back to their hotel room while the founders deliberated.
They finally did call us in at the end and said, guys, we love you guys. We want you in the league. We're taking 10 teams in. You got to get a place to play. So go back home, put your stuff together. Find a place to play. We're going to meet at the Fountain Blue in 3 or 4 weeks. And if you come in, we'll see whether we can get you a franchise. And that's the way it went.
The group returned home to Marion, Massachusetts, and started going 100 miles an hour looking for an arena. They knew they wanted to play in the New England area. And after what went down in Providence, Boston remained as the only option. They knew they could get the old Boston Arena, but
it was a dump.
The best case scenario was the Boston Garden, but that came with its own challenges. There were already multiple teams, including the Bruins, that called the Garden home.
We told them that the Garden sold out every game in Boston, and they had their minor league team playing there too, getting record crowds. The question remained, well, would we be able to get dates?
With only days remaining before the meetings in Miami and home game logistics yet to be ironed out, things were getting tense.
We only had, I think, 3 to 4 weeks between October to November meeting, you know? And we were hustling so hard. But, yeah, we were, you know, we were concerned. But we were always getting the encouragement, particularly from Dennis. At that point in time, we didn't have a lot of contact with Gary. It was with Dennis, and he did what he was great at, which is to keep us excited and positive.
Despite the uncertainty, the group decided to head to Florida. If nothing else, they figured the weather down in Miami would be a whole lot nicer than it was up in Massachusetts. That's when fate stepped in, or rather sat down behind them.
We get on the flight at Eastern Airlines in Logan. And I had met a fellow named Phil David Fine through my father, friend of the family's, and he was the architect. And I don't mean the literal architect. I mean, he was the one that created Schaefer Stadium where the Patriots started to play. He did it all through a real estate trust. So he was looked upon as, you know, a real genius for pulling that together. And he just happened to get on the same flight. And we recognized each other. And he says, oh, how are you, son? And I said, I'm very fine, Mr. Fine. He says, where are you going? I said, I'm going down, and here's why I'm going. He said, oh, that's interesting. And he said, if you get the franchise, come see me, and I'll help you get in the Boston Garden, and I'll represent you. And I said, you've got a deal.
Once their plane touched down in Florida, Howard and John checked into the Fountain Blue. There, just like at the Hotel Americana, Gary and Dennis kept all the franchise applicants apart from each other.
Yeah, we were sort of segregated from them. They were all segregated from one another, as I recall.
It was so they could hustle us.
The league founders wanted everyone to think there were 6 other applicants at the hotel bidding for the 2 vacant franchises.
Yeah, so they'd say to the guy in Ottawa, listen, you better do X, Y, and Z. And I don't think they had anybody down there for the 11th and 12th franchise except for John and I. We were it. If they wanted 12 franchises, they had to bring in Ottawa and us.
Leave New England out would be crazy.
Yeah.
When they were summoned to their meeting, the group was ready to play ball. The connection with Phil David Fine and the Boston Garden was made to seem a little more concrete than it actually was. "We're just about there. You just got to take a chance with us," they said. Of course, their group wasn't the only one doing a little bit of truth stretching.
All these things usually are a bunch of people claiming they have this and that put together, and other, quote, owners saying they had the money that it would take to buy a franchise and operate it.
A little bit of embellishing was acceptable, perhaps to be accepted. After all, it wasn't like the league founders had it all figured out either.
Gary and Dennis knew nothing about hockey. And in fact, the first constitution and bylaws they sent out was nothing more than a replica of the ABA. And they, in a few places, forgot to change the word from court, basketball court, to rink. So it was pretty clear not a whole lot of effort went into the legal documents.
All in all, Howard and Johnny's performance pitch proved to be enough.
They told us, good news, you got the franchise. And then they looked at us and said, but we've changed the price from 25 grand to 250 grand. And so Johnny, I remember this like yesterday, John and I looked at each other. We stepped out into the corridor or the hall of the hotel. And we just looked at each other and laughed and said, look, we don't have the money anyway. So why don't we just say, yeah, we've been winging it for 6 months. And we both got, and I think Godfrey was with us when we got laughing pretty hard, and we went in and said, fine.
We kind of looked at each other and pretended like that was not a problem.
And that's what we did.
Yeah.
Went in there and said, we're there, we're in. And frankly, even then, John, I think we knew we were never going to pay that.
Well, we knew we wouldn't.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
The pitch was a crux of the trip to Florida, but the group was down south for almost a week. For a couple of 20-somethings, finding ways to keep busy in Miami proved to be no problem at all.
I think we actually ended up at the Playboy Hotel. Oh, it was wild. We were throwing, you know, toilet paper bombs out the window at people by the pool and just having a grand old time and waiting for somebody to commit to give us the money.
During their stay at the Fountain Blue, they also spent time getting to know the other franchise owners. They proved to be quite the cast of characters.
You know, when you're stuck in a hotel, you tend to meet some of the other owners. And you learn the truth, what's going on and who's coming from where.
After much excitement in Miami, it was time to return to Marion. The boys were franchise owners now, though they wouldn't be riding coach anymore.
Kobe maxed out his American Express card and we rode back first class.
I mean, we flew back like a couple of assholes, but
yeah,
we were having fun. We didn't give a damn.
We had just committed ourselves to a $250,000.
Such assholes on the plane. He had that laughing box. And we, you know, those were the days when you could fly and smoke and do pretty much anything like that, right? On a plane. So that, I don't know how long it was from Miami to Boston, maybe, what is it? 3 hours, I reckon. And we used that 3 hours really well.
Well, we were sort of riding on a cloud. All of a sudden we were relatively famous, at least locally. I remember one of the things we did was get new cars. Remember that, Howard?
Oh, yeah.
The Citroën.
Citroën, yeah. High rollers.
Though the excitement never wore off, it didn't take long for the boys to be pulled back down to earth.
Yeah, there's a great old diner there, the Sip Shop. And it was where all the local folk would go for their morning coffee. And I would go there every morning, and occasionally Coburn would go there. But I'd always get up, go have my coffee, and it was your typical diner. And I'm sitting there having my coffee, and people are yakking away, and I see this guy in the corner reading the Boston Herald. It was a tabloid paper, right? Like the Post and the Daily News, holding it up on the back page headline.
Clear as day, the headline read,
"New franchise comes to Boston. These two kids have two chances, slim and none." And it was a real shock.
With each passing day, the publicity grew and grew.
We were in there as much as the president of the United States, it seems.
Yeah, we were in there a lot.
Seeing their names in the paper made it all the more real. Still, though, neither John nor Howard really knew what they were getting themselves into.
I think Howard had a better idea because he had been in the, with the Flyers.
I really didn't either, because what I did with the Flyers was kind of low man on the totem pole. And I saw what some of the owners and what the Flyers went through when they started. But frankly, we got way more publicity than what the Flyers got when they started.
Yeah.
Philadelphia was not a hockey market then. And we were in a hockey market in Boston. And we just, we were kind of an interesting story because these two young guys that think that they can take on the Bruins.
Big bad Bruins.
Not only the Bruins, though, but we're competing for the ticket dollar with the Celtics. And remember, Johnny, they had the Boston Braves. Yeah. And so we were really, I always call it, we went right into the belly of the beast.
It wasn't as if the fun was over. Far from it. Now, though, it was truly time to get to work.
We couldn't, be so loosey-goosey. I mean, we were now, our asses were on the line. And we clearly were of media interest. So we had to, when I say behave, I mean, we really now had to pay attention or make this happen. Or it's PR-wise, they're going to crucify us. And they were crucifying us anyway in terms of us not having a chance. But now our asses were on the line, publicly and privately.
There was less than a year until the WHA would kick off its inaugural season, and the boys still needed to raise money, find a place to play, get a hockey team together, and then organize a marketing and business group. Overwhelming? That's an understatement.
The adventure was worth it. It was all exciting. It wasn't really work.
Yeah, we always laughed. We never, this is probably our saving grace because we never quite took it seriously as we should have until we got into the combat zone, if you get what I mean. And getting into the combat zone was raising the money and now having to make it work. And day to day, having it out front there in the media, we then had to sort of shift into a different gear, which we did. We were like, again, barely 30, 28, 29, whatever it was. You don't have fear of failure. And if you do fail, you feel, okay, I got plenty of time to make up for it,
We never really discussed what we would do if we didn't make it. Our thoughts were always very positive that we would. And these old farts didn't know what they were talking about when they said you'll never make it. Because we were blind. To that misadventure. We loved what we were doing, and it was a great challenge, and we had the energy and youth on our side, and we were damn lucky.